Ridiculous History is a production of iHeartRadio. Welcome to the show, Ridiculous Historians. Thank you, as always, for tuning in. I was thinking a lot about creepy oldies music recently. Do you guys remember that song, Hey There, Little Miss Riding Hood? Hey There, Little Red Riding Hood? Anyway, I'm Ben.
As soon as you said creepy and I knew what we were doing, Ben, I knew it was going to be that song.
Yeah, I'm Noel, by the way, and he's like, you sure are looking good. You're everything that a big bad wolf could want. Followed by, we're not talking about a howl exactly today. We're talking about more of a whistle, the infamous wolf whistle, also known as the cat call, which I always thought was interesting. Like, maybe there's something to be unpacked in the differentiation between a wolf whistle and a cat call. I don't know, but it all started in this incredible movie that I have not seen in its entirety, but it's called To Have and Have Not, which is a romantic kind of drama thriller from 1944, which I believe was one of the earliest debuts of the incredible Lauren Bacall. And she and Humphrey Bogart appeared across from each other in multiple films. But there's a scene where, they're just kind of like, the sexual tension is just killing you. It's palpable. You can cut it with a knife. And she gives him a kiss and he says, well, what'd you do that for? I don't know. Why don't we play the clip?
You know you don't have to act with me, Steve. You don't have to say anything and you don't have to do anything. Not a thing. Oh, maybe just whistle. You know how to whistle, don't you, Steve? You just put your lips together and blow.
Yeah, you know, I've got to say, from her description, it sounds a little more simple maybe than it is, because a lot of people struggle with whistling. But I've got to ask our super producer, Casey Pegram. Casey, you know, we didn't want to give you the nickname Wolf Whistle for this one, and you'll see why. But have you seen To Have and Have Not?
I believe I have. Yeah, I think it's a Howard Hawks movie, and I'm pretty sure I saw it at some point in college, but it's been a while.
Did you learn to whistle from watching it?
No, I've never been able to do that whistle. I can do regular, like, tuneful whistling pretty well, but the wolf whistle completely evades me.
Oh, but that's the thing, though. This is where it gets funny. She says, put your lips together and blow, which, you know, the wolf whistle, as I think about it, is where you put your thumb and forefinger.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know how to do that. I don't even understand what it does. Is it just intense?
I guess you got to modulate it somehow, I don't know.
I feel like it just sort of is like a little booster for a regular whistle. I don't know. But again, this scene really did, because, you know, he does the whistle sound. You hear that in the clip. And the wolf whistle is all about the pitch modulation. It's all about the wee, wee, you know, that's it. And it was that archetype that kind of created the model of what was a very fashionable thing for a while. It was a sign of, like, hey, good looking, you know, it's kind of flirtatious or whatever. But it wouldn't be terribly long before it became incredibly maligned and in poor taste, and something that we think of now today. The idea of catcalling is right up there with any other form of sexual harassment. It is not okay, and it's something that women don't want to have to deal with. No question about it. But, you know, back when Bogey did it, it was kind of cute.
it was portrayed as, you know, an aspirational, cool thing to do. Kind of like how smoking cigarettes was portrayed for a long time. But I like your point about the sexual harassment. We have to set that out in the very beginning. We are a history show, but right now, in Le Bouche's domain of France, politicians are seriously considering a bill where they're going to fine people €90 if they're caught wolf whistling because they want to try to combat sexual harassment. And then I believe there's even a British politician who's saying, let's crack down on this, on catcalling people, wolf whistling on people. And, you know, if you ask anybody, it's around. It's been around. But I think to your question, Noel, and I love the way you did the pitch there, the question is, how did this become so charged with meaning?
Well, I mean, I think it's sort of like a pop culture trope kind of thing. You think about it in cartoons, you know, you think about it in like Tex Avery cartoons or, you know, stuff from the 50s and like the Bogart movie. Like that is the period that I think of that particular version of it. But it goes farther back than that, a lot farther. It, you know, was around in ancient Rome, for example. The idea of men hissing at women, that's definitely a little sinister. Or whistling at them in a similar way, you know, not necessarily the same two-tone kind of structure, but it definitely was a thing. There was a comic playwright by the name of Plautus who wrote a play called Mercator in 200 BC, and he refers to a young woman saying that when she passed through the streets, all the men would look at her, leer, nod, wink, and whistle. So, you know, if that's not just literally describing what a catcall is, then I don't know what is.
Yeah. And, you know, this always thinks I've always been mystified by the motivation for catcalling or whistling to people in general. Like, is there ever anybody who's going to, like, when they're 18, they're going to say, oh, mom, dad, how did you meet? And they say, well, one day I was walking down the street living my own life, and your father, who was pretty drunk, whistled at me and said, "Hey, hot stuff! You know, you look your butt looks like two bobcats in a tight sack fighting." And next thing you know, we're married in Vegas, and here you are.
And we're so happy. We're so happy together. And we love you so much.
Right.
And thank you for asking about our origin story. It's something that... exactly, Ben. Like, it's like, what are you after with this? It's just a flex. It's a weird flex. It's a way of saying, hey, look at me exercising some form of control over you. It's a way to make people uncomfortable and to kind of exercise some form of dominance, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And it certainly feels that way in the Roman version of it, where it's a group of men with a lone female passing through the streets and them trying to exercise some kind of control over her. Certainly there's no sense that they went after her, tried to physically harm her or rape her or anything, but, you know, enough alcohol and enough ill will and horribleness, that certainly would be an escalation of something like that. So that's part of it too. There's an implication of, hey, we see you and you better be careful or we might do something about it, you know? Mm-hmm.
Somehow have that power over a person. It's interesting, you know, we're mentioning Mercator, the merchant, because still scholars are debating whether or not that's the first mention of whistling used in this way. It may depend on translation, but there's another theory too, the idea that this, again, very distinct whistle may have its roots in maritime history, that it may have come from sailors trying to communicate at sea.
Yeah, they had a certain type of horn or like a pipe, I guess, called a boatswain's pipe that would make what was referred to as a general call. That was a way of communicating at sea. And, you know, you think of sailors being away at sea with no women around. They get back to, you know, shore and they're, let's just say, feeling a bit deprived of the company of women, therefore perhaps acting a little, let's say, thirsty and, you know, behaving poorly towards women, whether involving alcohol or otherwise. And again, I'm sure there are plenty of, you know, very polite sailors that would, you know, just court a woman in a much more gentlemanly fashion. But it certainly was rife for these kinds of rumors that, okay, the general call is where this came from. It was a way of getting sailors' attention, for them to get each other's attention. And some historians believe that when they docked, they would do the same thing to let each other know, okay, we got a live one here. We've spotted an attractive lady.
Mm-hmm. This is controversial. There's an article in The Independent which kind of explains why politicians have been considering doing a ban of this sort. A lexicographer, Grant Barrett, has one problem with this wolf whistle theory. It's that, as far as he can tell, it's not true. Historians at Britain's Royal Navy and its National Maritime Museum said that they had never heard of this before. They thought it would be unusual that sailors would take a specific call used for emergency situations to leer at women. But Noel, we found a collection of the varying whistles and calls that sailors use. And there is one that sounds a lot like a wolf whistle, right?
Well, dude, I mean, to me, it strikes me as being like the equivalent of like an air traffic controller using like hand signals to like signal a woman, you know, his interest in a woman, like bringing out his lighted like lightsaber baton mm-hmm. things with his like orange vest on.
Doing and,
like,
some semaphore.
Doing exactly. That's the word. This would be very similar because this would have been like a pretty, I don't know, sacred is maybe taken a little too far, but these were sounds that they were relied on for safety and were very specific to different conditions and, you know, different navigational maneuvers that they would need to make, etc. So the idea that they would have taken one of a lexicon of these sounds and used that on land to kind of leer at a woman just doesn't make a lot of sense. Though there is one of them that does resemble that classic wolf whistle sound that we heard Humphrey Bogart do. Let's hear that one real quick. It's for the maneuver of turn two.
Okay. I mean, yeah, that I can see why you would think, like, people would think that. It makes sense to me. It's logical, right?
It does. And I have to run through the rest of these because they're all so cool sounding. We've got adjutant's call, all hands, you know that one, belay, heave around, mess call, I'm assuming that's food, pass the word, piping the side. I like that one. Secure general quarters, which I guess would mean stay inside. Sweepers. Then we've got turn two, which was our wolfy sound. And then these are a series of veers. Maybe you can fill me in on this, Ben, or offer some conjecture. That's V-I-E-R-S. And there are four varieties: 8-side boys, 4-side boys, 6-side boys, and 2-side boys.
And again, you can find all of these at archive.org. If you are in the maritime industry, I'd love to hear whether these are still in use. Tell us more weird stories about life on the boat.
And what's up with them boys? Well, that's what I want to know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We're always concerned with them boys. There's one question we have not addressed in this. If it did come, you know, from a maritime source, if it, whatever its origin may be, how did it become called a wolf whistle? John Lucas, who penned A Brief History of Whistling, another very specific expert.
Yes, exactly.
He's like the guy for whistles.
Yeah.
He has his own theory, and it is this. He said he was talking with an elderly shepherd, and the shepherd, you know, was also an expert in herding sheep. And this guy told him that he trained sheepdogs and he has a bunch of calls for the mm-hmm. sheepdogs. Mm-hmm. And that one of those sounds exactly like a wolf whistle. And then John Lucas apparently said, that's kind of politically incorrect. And then he said, no, it's kosher. It's from Albania.
That's right. He explained that in the mountains of southern Europe, shepherds have used this tone, this two notes, for centuries to communicate with their dogs and let them know whenever wolves appear. You could train a dog to respond to a particular set of tones. We know that. You can make them drool when you blow. Isn't that a whistle? A bell. That was a bell with the Pavlov dog situation. Yeah. So again, you can absolutely, like, you know, condition a dog to respond or to be aware of what a certain sound means. And the key was, and honestly, as a sort of a sound nerd, I guess, modulating sound causes it to carry better. So if you have like the high low, it gives you these like two opportunities to catch the sound, kind of, if that makes sense. I'm not being super scientific about it, but this proved to be true. It would carry for miles, and especially in the open plains of, like, you know, pastures of sheep grazing lands or what have you. And so there we go. I feel like we can put that one to bed as well. So this wasn't a wolf whistle per se. It was more a whistle, not a whistle that a wolf would do. A wolf being sort of like a cartoonish stand-in for like a, you know, bad guy, right? Like a dog.
A sleaze bag.
Yeah. I don't know. Wolves, I understand. Calling somebody a dog. Dogs are nice. We're talking about dogs here. Dogs protecting the dogs against the wolves with the wolf whistle. So it does get confusing, and it's easy to insert your own interpretation when things just fit so closely. I mean, even that boatwain's call had me going, because it sure sounds the same. But when you look at the motivation behind it, or what it would have taken, you know, to kind of, what's the word, co-opt that, it starts to feel a little questionable, right?
Yeah, exactly. And John Lucas says that he saw this for himself when he was a kid in World War II, because there would be a lot of soldiers from the U.S. who would hang around and try to whistle at women who were going in and out of like church halls and social buildings. And if we could, I'd love to do just a quick reenactment of a actual facts, as our pal Lauren Vogelbaum would say, newsreel about wolf whistling. It's a report from July 5th, 1945. It sometimes takes a little bit of coaxing, but mostly these men of the Six Corps enjoy the swanky swimming hole on their day off. Nestled amongst the peaks of the Austrian Tyrol, it offers rest and relaxation to war-weary vets whose duties have become less pressing since VE Day.
I'm sorry, what is VE Day?
It's Victory in Europe Day.
Ah, yes. And what is he pointing at? Just one guess. But the girl he left behind can rest easily, because as these signal corps pictures show, the non-fraternization order is still in effect. Tyrolean gals are mighty enticing, and all a wolf can do is howl. But maybe when the tourist trade opens up again. Wee, wee. I can't really do it. I just gotta make the sound. That is part of it. GI wolf whistles, baby.
Oh, and I did learn the science of it. Which is actually, it's funny to explain because it sounds really simple. You take your lips and you kind of go like this. You tuck your lips back around your teeth and let them hang loose.
Okay.
Yeah. And then you choose a set of fingers. Either you could do your index, your middle, your pinky, whatever speaks to you. Yeah. And you put them together so that
that's not happening for me.
There's like a tiny gap between the fingers. Mm-hmm. I push your tongue out. How is this going to translate, Casey? You push your tongue out so it's like 1 centimeter behind your teeth. I pop your tongue up and you try to blow the air through that gap over the top of your tongue.
No, can't do it. Can't do it, Ben. And I really hope we didn't gross everybody out with all our mouth sounds. Are you doing it? Can you do it?
Not yet, but I am. I'm going to try to learn it. I'm going to try. But anyway, so there is a way to do it. But what we're establishing with that is it's the same kind of whistle all the way through from probably ancient Rome up through World War II. But for most of us, well, I don't want to make assumptions, but for many of us listening, definitely all three of us, the first image that comes to our mind when we think of wolf whistles is, like you said at the top, Noel, cartoons. Not all of which have aged well. Pepe Le Pew is a real creep.
Yeah, he's basically like a kind of a low-key stalker who, you know, he's so gentle and kind of nonchalant about it that it, you know, it takes you a minute to wrap your head around the fact that he's just kind of like a serial killer. Like, he's just relentless. He's like a Terminator type figure. But yeah, no, the cartoons of Tex Avery, some of those haven't aged particularly well either, and that's because they're taking a lot of the cues from their sexist and often racist times in which they were around. 1937, for example, in Little Red Walking Hood, in one of Avery's cartoons, where his iconic wolf figure, which you see it in memes and GIFs a lot, where his tongue rolls out of his mouth because he's oogling at some, you know, pretty lady and his eyes pop out and all that stuff. It's just this kind of the nature of it is that he's completely unhinged, out of control of any of his bodily desires, right? And is going to stop at nothing to have said woman, right? That doesn't happen like on camera or in frame, but yeah, it's definitely a thing, and it's very it's hard to watch, honestly, but the animation is pretty incredible.
Yeah, well, this is the fascinating part about this, right? So many of us understand it in the context of depictions and cartoons, right? But Little Red Walking Hood, which you mentioned, is pivotal here because I think it's the first time Tex Avery had depicted a cartoon wolf whistling, and he chases the protagonist around until someone knocks him over the head with a hammer. And this is clearly supposed to be justice being served, right? You're the audience. You're supposed to be happy that this wolf creature got his comeuppance. And according to analysts, that's because in the 1930s, it was not considered a good thing to be a Lothario, a ladies' man, any other word you want to put in there. And it only later evolved over the next few decades to something like a positive image, which is weird to me that they started out not glorifying this.
You know, I didn't know that, Ben. That's interesting to me. So he really is kind of considered the villain in some of these cartoons. And I always thought it was just kind of normalizing that behavior. But that's interesting. And a lot of this you can read about Pierre Floquet, who wrote the comic language of Tex Avery. He you know, knows the man in and out, and he knows all of the nuances of his career and, you know, his contributions to, you know, tropes like this. And it's crazy. I was getting a little confused because there's another Red Hood character. In 1943, Avery did Red Hot Riding Hood. Obviously, things were, you know, getting a little more risque. And you know, it's super creative. It's the kind of things that you see, like, depicted in, like, Who Framed Roger Rabbit, like that style of things where, you know, there's this weird kind of self-mutilation kind of vibe where the wolf is so, I'm just going to say it, horny for this, you know, attractive kind of Betty Boop, Jessica Rabbit-esque Little Red Riding Hood character that he's trying to, like, bash himself repeatedly over the hammer to knock himself out so he doesn't, like, do a bad thing. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it feels like he's trying to numb his senses so he won't just rape this character. Like, it's pretty insane.
Yeah, it's troubling. Technically, the animation, though, is very well done. It's like hand-drawn and stuff. It's an iconic scene. Even if you feel like you have not seen it, you have seen some version of it. It occurs, of course, in Who Framed Roger Rabbit. It occurs in countless cartoons after 1943. It's also in, and I thought of this too, it's also in The Mask, starring Jim Carrey. I love the comic books. I don't know if I'm going to watch it again, though. I'm not sure how it aged. I'll watch, you know what? I'll watch one clip on YouTube.
Ben, somebody needs to stop you.
Is it that
bad? Watching The Mask again. No, that was his, like, catchphrase. Somebody stop me from watching The Mask again. I remember seeing it in theaters the first time you ever saw Cameron Diaz. And she was also like, see, that's the thing. The thing about the Little Red Riding Hood character in Red Hot Riding Hood is she is a sex object. That is how she is depicted and nothing else. She is meant to be, like, busty and sexy and kind of scantily clad. And the wolf just loses his mind. And that's what happens in The Mask as well with the Cameron Diaz character. She's wearing this crazy, like, low cut, you know, kind of Vegas showgirl type skirt. And he just, you know, his heart starts beating out of his chest. And all of that stuff is from the Tex Avery tropes. But yeah, it's super troubling and definitely doesn't age well. And likely was just as responsible for Humphrey Bogart in popularizing this as a kind of Lothario-esque kind of move. But the thing is, the Humphrey Bogart scene, what's really interesting about that is the Lauren Bacall character is super empowered. Like, she sits in his lap on her own and she kisses him without permission and then does it a second time. And she has complete control in that situation. So it's very, very different. And when he whistles after her, she has kind of baited him into doing it. So again, very different. There's a lot more consent between these two characters than there would be a traditional, you know, catcall or even this cartoon depiction, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, agreed. Just to give you a sense of how sexualized this Tex Avery cartoon is, again, that's the Red Hot Riding Hood, it ran into trouble with censors in the beginning. And now, the author you mentioned earlier, Noel, now people believe it was only able to be shown on screen because the U.S. military wanted cartoons like it. There's a fascinating theory here. Fluquet says, if you increase the libido or, you know, the thirstiness of soldiers by watching cartoons, they'll get frustrated. If they get frustrated, they become more aggressive. And if they become more aggressive, that's the logic here, they become better soldiers. And, you know, this is apparently the gist of what Army commissioners said when they were, you know, describing what they wanted wartime cartoons to do. And the last note on Red Hot Riding Hood, it was seen by so many U.S. soldiers and by so many kids in the U.S. that if they weren't already, you know, thinking of wolf whistles as cool, they were now. And that's why the first mention of wolf whistling comes in a newspaper in 1944. But if we are being fair, we have to tell you about something that I don't know about you guys. It blew my mind. I had never heard of this. There is apparently an equivalent to a wolf whistle, but from the other side of the sexual divide.
Yeah, it's called the slurp. And it was reported on in February 1944 in the Fresno Bee, where it says that a group of Fulton Street scientists report that at last they have identified and isolated the female version of the wolf whistle, that often heard call used by men of the armed forces when their trail crosses that of the opposite sex. For certain reasons, this group of scientists do not want their names published. I wonder why. It seems unnecessary to add that their research was undertaken for no particular reason. This sounds like an Onion article to me. Anyone can think of. They call this female answer to the wolf whistle the slurp. The slurp is defined as a soft female noise made with the teeth, tongue, and lips, which sounds exactly as it is spelled, and which sometimes, but not always, means Roger?
As in like, yeah, I...
Oh, like Roger.
Whistle, like whistle heard and copy that, bro.
Mm-hmm. Is it like that? Is it like a click, click?
Casey, you know, behind the curtain here.
I cannot find any like documentation of this.
Yeah. You're the person who off mic, I think both.
Well, I misspoke. I thought it was, I had something completely different in mind.
Oh, okay.
From the way this is described. Okay. So I don't know. I cannot corroborate any of this.
Okay. Because when we were talking about this earlier.
Oh yeah, the slurp.
Yeah. Casey got so excited. You were like, oh yeah, 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 yeah.
Well, we were talking about, especially like cartoon sounds. I can think of a few, I don't know, almost like the Hannibal Lecter thing or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah. Yeah, exactly. That's kind of what popped in my head. I did not, whatever this thing is something else.
Can you imagine catcalling? Like, can you imagine if one of these guys had put out a wolf whistle and the person who's whistling at hit him back with that Hannibal Lecter fava beans and Chianti, you know? I wonder how that would go.
Oh, man. Yeah, it's crazy, though. There is a screenshot of this page, the Fresno Bee article. It makes you pay money to look at it in full screen, but I can see that this article that's being referenced here in our materials is a thing. Maybe it's some kind of satire. I don't know. I certainly had never heard of the slurp. So perhaps let's not report this as though this were actual facts, a thing, because now that we're Googling it, it doesn't seem to be much to back this up. But I like the idea of the existence of a female equivalent to the wolf whistle.
Yeah, fight the power. We do also have records of wolf whistling being so popular. There were whistling contests. It was even used once as sort of a talent portion of a beauty pageant type thing when 17-year-old Janice Norse on September 1944 won the title Miss Sheboygan due in part to her incredibly piercing wolf whistle.
Fascinating. I'm a big fan of precision whistling. You know, this wolf whistle thing is a little bit more of like a blunt instrument. But, you know, if you think about like Snow White, her ability to whistle, like, you know, in this really melodic kind of polyphonic almost kind of way. There is an Atlanta artist, or formerly of Atlanta, she lives in Los Angeles now, but her name's Adron, and she has this ability to do these like just super precise whistled sections in a lot of her music. I highly recommend checking her out if you want to hear some really cool, non-offensive whistling.
How about Andrew Bird, man? We got to give it up for him too. I love whistling and music.
Oh, agreed. Agreed. Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
So you may be asking yourself, whither the wolf whistle? Where did it go? Because you don't hear it as much now, I would imagine. You still see it pop up in fiction, but it seems like, according to a couple of the people we mentioned earlier, it started dying out in the 1970s because partially the rise of feminism, prosecuting for women's rights. Hey, I shouldn't be harassed just because I'm walking to the store. And then people started seeing it as uncool, as a more demeaning thing to do to other people. And now one of the big debates is, how will it be depicted in the future? I mean, what do you think? I remember this whistle occurring in things like The Mask and in things like, you know, cartoons, but not any recent ones.
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely used in, like, you know, I think probably the way it's used now is to seem dated, or to in some way kind of create like an atmosphere. Even the way it was used in movies originally, I can't remember which writer in our research materials said this, but the idea was to very quickly convey some things about a character, either kind of trashy, sort of like, you know, Lothario-ness, or flirtation, or sometimes both, you know. And it was a very quick way of expressing that, as it was done in the movie Grease. There's the uses of wolf whistles in Grease to kind of help create that vibe of like the 50s. But again, that's a movie that was made in the late 70s that was a period piece about the 50s, and it's a musical, obviously, so that makes sense to use it in that way. Or in Legally Blonde, for example, it's used for kind of like a gag in which Reese Witherspoon's character talks about how she's comfortable using legal jargon in everyday life. And then a man wolf whistles and she says, "I object." So, you know, it's definitely something that has been absolutely canceled because of the Me Too movement and just a lot more forward momentum in, you know, not tolerating with any of the kind of sexism or implied, you know, dominance of men over women that we were talking about in the top of the show. That's just not a thing that people are okay with anymore. I mean, at least the people that I know, and it's becoming less and less possible to carry on this kind of behavior and not just be completely shut down with how quickly things can spread on the internet.
And that is why super producer Casey Pegram did not want to give you the albatross of the nickname Wolf Whistle. It felt like a condemnation and an undeserved one. And hey, you know, maybe that's the reason the three of us don't know how to do it. Because of the time we were raised in, which I think is fine. I'm sure there are plenty of other amazing whistles you can learn and watch and hear in music and story and song. But this was pretty eye-opening to me. I'm glad we did this one, man.
Me too. Yeah, it's definitely not something I really think about because it does feel like such a dated thing. But it really is, you know, there are people still in the Me Too kind of discussions, or just in general about, like, you know, not treating women like trash. The idea of catcalling is still very much a thing. And that's just sort of an escalation of the wolf whistle, just using words, just what, like unsolicited comments about women's bodies or just about, you know, their existence in terms of how it would benefit men. So yeah, wolf whistling still exists, at least in terms of the escalation, or just like a more rhetorical version of it, where people are shouting out at women from across the street. That's the idea, is just a loud, unsolicited advance, let's say. But back in the 50s and stuff, it was considered good, clean fun. And it'd be like, hey, come on, what, you don't have a sense of humor? Like, doesn't mean anything.
Mm. And we want to hear your experience, your opinion on this. If you are a person with a talent for whistling, I was trying to think of a cooler way to say it. If you are a whistler yourself, we'd love to hear some of your input on whistles, the history of whistles. At this point, I'm just saying the word whistle because it's as fun as saying Sheboygan. Anyhow, thank you as always to Gabe Luzier, who refuses to tell us how to pronounce his last name. And of course, thank you to super producer Casey Pegram.
Thanks to Alex Williams, who composed our theme, Christopher Hasiotis, also here in spirit, Jonathan Strickland, that notorious and devious quizster. Hope to have you back soon, buddy. Or, you know, maybe die in a fire. No, don't do that. We love you. We want to have you back. And you will be back soon because it's really not up to us. You just kind of pop up whenever you pop up. I'm surprised you haven't popped up now because I'm talking about you so long, but I'm going to stop.
Oh, yeah, we got to sew it up before he gets here. Oh man, okay. Also, you can find us on Facebook. You can find us on Twitter. You can find us on Instagram. We love to recommend our Facebook group. It is Ridiculous Historians. Check it out. You'll see some top-tier memes and some great discussion. You can also follow us as individuals on the internet. I am at Ben Bolin on Instagram and at Ben Bolin HSW on Twitter.
And you can find me exclusively on Instagram at HowNowNoelBrown. We'll see you next time, folks. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.